Hey, what's up? This is episode 132, Focus 40. Today, we're going to be talking to someone who wrote a book on cracking the PM interview. What's PM? Let's figure out. 1, 2, 3.
Welcome to the Design Your Thinking Podcast, a show where we think, learn, and explore the product mindset so you can design better products every day. And now your host, Karthik.
Hey there, what's up? Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining me again on a fresh new episode on the Design Your Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Karthik, and today we are doing a Focus 40 episode. Yes, we are doing this after a very long time. The last Focus 40 episode came out on, I think, the 28th of June, where we spoke to Kevin Stegerwald, which was a great one. You should give it a listen. Just head over to designthinking.com/episode111. And incidentally, Focus 40 was the first format I came up with when I came up with the idea of this podcast. And this has been by far the most listened to kinds of episodes. So I'm sure you're going to love today's one as well. So what are we waiting for? Let's jump right into the episode. But before we did that, if you are someone who's listening to this show for the first time, I highly recommend you type the following address on your browser address bar, designyourthinking.com/insider. And once you're in, type in your first name and your email address. That's right. That's my email newsletter, and I would love to see you every week or every other week with interesting product insights that you are just going to love. And also, yes, you don't have to worry about missing out episodes because I will have the links to all the episodes that you missed out in the week or the 2 week time. And the second link I want you to remember is designyourthinking.com/episode132. That's the link to the show notes for this episode that you're listening to right now. So just in case or connect with them, just head over to designyourthinking.com/episode132. All right, let's now jump right into the show. But before I did that, I want to quickly introduce you to our guest today. Our guest today is a head of product management at Asana. She's a co-author of Cracking the PM Interview, the best-selling book on product management, and she was previously working with Google and Microsoft. All right, let's welcome Jackie Bavaro. Jackie, welcome to the show. Super good to have you with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is going to be fun. So let's get chatting here, Jackie. Let's get right into the meat of the show here. You've been doing product management all your career. Could you quickly give us an introduction of how you got into product management and what you currently do? And how did you kind of find your career path, so to speak?
Yeah, so I was one of the lucky ones. I studied computer science and economics in school, and I learned about product management during one of my summer internships. Mm-hmm. So I had a friend who pointed me at Microsoft, and they have a great program to get lots of interns who've never done any product management at all in the door. So I started my career off at Microsoft. And I loved it. But when I moved to New York, there weren't too many PM jobs there. So I switched over to Google, worked at Google for 3.5 years as a product manager on some different things. But the big one was on Google search. Mm-hmm. So I worked on things like getting local results, image results and video results right onto the homepage. It was really fun. I learned a whole lot, lots of analytical skills. And from there, I got this great opportunity to go be the first PM at Asana. Mm-hmm. You can call it Asana, however you pronounce it is fine. Right. And from there, I grew the team from one PM to about 10 or 11 of us now, and I run the PM team here. So so that's sort of the quick summary of my career. And then in the middle, as you mentioned, I wrote Cracking the PM Interview. So. A while back, actually around the time when I had first started at Asana, mm-hmm. I was thinking about just what do I want to do with my life? If I never had to work a day in my life again, what would I be doing with my time? Mm-hmm. And I realized that I have this real passion for product management. It's this thing that I feel really lucky to have stumbled upon. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's not so easy for everybody to get in the door. So, and there's just so many details. You don't take now there are some college classes on, and, you know, business school classes on product management,
right.
But really it's more of an on the job training thing. And I wanted to teach people about it. I wanted to share it with more of the world. And so mm-hmm. I started blogging, wrote a lot on Quora. And from there, I met Gail, who wrote Cracking the Coding Interview. Mm-hmm. And we paired up and wrote Cracking the PM Interview. And that's been just really successful. And I've been really happy with it.
Awesome. This is going to be fun. So I think I have a bunch of questions for you around that as well. So we'll get to it towards the end. But let's begin with this. Let's start with your success in thinking to begin with. You've been working with different kinds of teams, like you described back in Google, Microsoft, and now with whichever way we call it, Asana or Asana, right? And you've had this real passion and you identified early on. What is it one thing that you think has made you successful as the product manager and maker that you are today?
Yeah. So I think there's obviously a lot of different things PMs do all the time and so many different factors. But for me, I think it's it all rolls up into focusing on impact. Mm-hmm. So always thinking about how can I have the most impact and thinking both about the short and the long term ways to get the most impact. So when I think about this, I think about it like on the short term, there's things like when you're working on a project, you can get really, really aggressive on scoping and think about how do I get this to customers as quickly as I can so that I can learn from them. And I really focus on, you know, every little piece that we're going to spend more time on, is that having the most impact it can. But then in the bigger picture, there's the long term of how do you have the most impact. And for that, I think it's really about like investing in good relationships and being willing to have this learning mindset. So, you know, there are sometimes things you could do where you feel like, I'll have the most impact if I can just like come up with a solution and direct my team exactly to what I want them to do and shut down any disagreement, and then we'll launch something quickly and I'll have the most impact. But when you look on the longer term, if you didn't invest in good relationships, if you don't learn how to work really well with your team, you might have your first launch go really well, but you're over the next year, you're not going to be able to have as much impact.
That's a very interesting point that you make here. Any specific things that you consciously do to keep these relationships strong and going?
One thing that that I do is I try to have a high tolerance for failure, mm-hmm. which is kind of a funny thing to say. But I think that for me, it's really important that I, for example, I'm willing to delegate things. Mm-hmm. So if I'm working with an engineer and they really want to, you know, try their hand out at designing, at, you know, coming up with the next feature we should launch. A lot of the times I'll try to give them the right structure, give them enough support, but I'll let them try it out. And if they make especially if they make a small mistake, I'll just support them right through it. And I won't tell people you can't do something unless you do it perfect. I really try to encourage everybody to think about what we're doing in the long run and be okay with small mistakes, because that's how we'll learn the best.
Right. And that's a very important point. And most often we ignore the relationship bit, which is why I kind of got curious about with that point.
Yeah.
Right. So, Jackie, you know this, and we constantly make a lot of decisions as product managers. Could be understanding customer needs, like talking to engineers and negotiating what's in the backlog or whatever it could be. How do you specifically here manage to stay productive? Because productivity is one thing that I've seen a lot of us battle with. I battle with it constantly, always find solutions, but how do you go about doing it?
Yeah, and I think productivity is really, really important, because if you can be a high capacity PM, you can get so much more done. And I remember this in my very first job at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. When I started out, I had no system of organization. I had a whiteboard where I would try to write down the things I was supposed to do, and I would forget about something, and I like had a million unread emails, and I could never stay on top of things. And somebody suggested the book Getting Things Done to me. Mm-hmm. So it's a really tiny book. I read through it, and I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. And I started getting everything organized, and I found that I had a lot more time to do things, and I was able to be one of the most responsive PMs on the team. That meant that not only were my engineers coming to me, but sometimes even other engineers in the company were like, hey, my PM's like too busy to help me with this. Can you talk it through with me? And I would, and that really, you know, raised my reputation across the whole company, which gave me more credibility so I could do more. So for me, the thing that I do the most right now is I do this thing I call time boxing. And so what I do is for any piece of work that I have to do, I think about first, not how long is it going to take, but instead, how long is it worth to take? And so I'll say, like, I forget about how long it's going to actually take to write the spec. I say, like, is it worth 4 hours of my time? Is it worth 12? Is it worth one? And then start off with that limit on how long it should take. And then I just won't let it take longer. So if you know ahead of time, I'm only going to give myself 4 hours to work on this, it opens your eyes to a lot of things you can do to get things out faster. So, so when I'm like, okay, I've got to get this spec out quickly, I'll put a draft out really early, even before it's totally polished. Or sometimes I'll just know that I have to make a decision without having all the information. And people always say, like, you know, as a PM, you should make decisions when you only have 80% of the information or 90%, but don't wait for that last 10 or 20. But that's hard to do on its own in a vacuum. But when you realize I only have 2 hours, then it becomes crystal clear. You realize there's no way I can run 20 pieces, you know, run 20 pieces of analysis to like get all that data. If I only have 2 hours, the only thing I can do is I can like ask one of the people who worked on this before, check in with our user research team, and then I just have to make a decision and go.
Interesting. And you talked about delegating stuff. So you said that's in the context of the earlier question about long-term and maintaining relationships. Does delegation, I mean, I know it works great when it comes to managing productivity, but then is there a way you go about delegating? Is there a thumb rule that you use?
Yeah. So for me, so I'm a manager, a people manager now. And so for me, the main way I think about delegation is if there's something that that I have to do, I think, is there someone else at this company who would love to do this piece of work? Is there somebody else at this company who would think it was a great career growth opportunity to get to do this piece of work? And a lot of the time, the answer is yes. And I talk to PMs on my team about this too. So a lot of times there's some, you know, maybe project management type work that the PM's doing, or maybe they're triaging bugs. And I say, well, think about the people on your team. Maybe there's somebody there who's looking to become more senior. They're looking to pick up more things on their team. Maybe somebody would really, really love to be doing the bug triaging for you. And you can take a second pass at it. You know, you'll hear this phrase, trust but verify. But if you can find something where it's a win-win, where you're not doing the work, so you save that time, and the person who's doing it is really excited and glad they get to do it.
That's nice. So I can imagine you have some sort of a go-to place where you find what each person in your team is interested in, so you can quickly kind of delegate stuff.
And this goes back to investing in good relationships. That whenever I join a team, I try to have, you know, just a chat, like go for a walk or go grab coffee with somebody on the team and just talk to them about who they are, what they like, what they're trying to get out of their job. A lot of people have, you know, people aren't necessarily that comfortable talking about like, what are my ambitions? What do I want to grow into? But if you can ask people directly or pull it out of them and just say like, hey, we're working together. What do you want to do? What are you excited to do? Are there areas where you want to grow? And then you get to know each person. And that's helpful, not just in delegating, but in how you talk about the work. If you're like, hey, team, we're gonna run a whole bunch of small growth experiments. If you know that the team is really excited about learning how to run A/B tests, then you can kind of frame it just that way. If you know that they care more about just like seeing the numbers move, you can talk about it in a different way.
Fantastic. I totally agree with that point. Conversations can go a long way. So, Jackie, let's move on here. I just get into productivity a little deeper, but then we have a bunch of things to talk about. One of the things I've seen with people making products is this whole approach to managing this so-called balance between being creative and being productive. I mean, I know some agree with it, some disagree with it, but then it's just a belief that I once read in Harvard Business Review. And, you know, I just choose to call it as a creativity paradox. In other words, you know, we have to forego one in order to get to the other kind of thing. So how do you manage to strike this balance between staying creative and being productive, Jackie?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's really interesting that you call that a paradox, because I remember the same thing when I started as a PM. And relationships is another thing that can kind of fall under the same thing that feels like a paradox. I remember I noticed that I was spending a lot of time just talking to my coworkers, like in the kitchen at work. And I was making friends with them, and we were having a good time. I started to feel like guilty about it. So I went to talk to my boss, and my boss was like, do I need to stop doing this? And he's like, no, that's great. That's like how you become a good PM, is it's not all, you're not measured by the value of the time you spend, you know, typing up specs or like critiquing designs. It's about, again, like I said at the beginning, it's about the impact. And if you're doing things that will lead to better impact, then that's really important. And so for me, for creativity, I think that the best inspiration for creativity is outside of the PM world. So I see creativity, for me, it's all about mixing and matching. So it's getting inspiration from one place and then applying it somewhere else. And I had actually kind of a funny example here that I got the other day from my blender. So I got on Amazon Prime Day, I bought a new blender, and it came with really interesting getting started steps. So it's this new blender, and it said four easy steps to get started. And I read it, and it was like easy, and it was exciting. And it just had all sorts of little clever things. Like they said, step one, read the whole instruction manual. And I was like, okay, that one's kind of cheating. And then, I think one of the steps was start with our recipes. While your blender will blend any food, not all combinations are palatable. And I thought that was really funny and applicable to Asana, because the product I do is a work tracking tool, and it can track anything. So you can track projects, and you can track tasks, and you can track customers, and you can track, you know, people were tracking like animals on a farm. You can track anything, but it's best if you sort of start with our templates, because not every version of tracking something is going to be as palatable as the others.
Right. So let's move on here, Jackie. Let's get into the second part of our conversation here that I call as a product mindset. So product mindset is essentially a set of beliefs, skills, techniques, and thinking hacks that I've seen successful product makers possess that, you know, allows them to learn, push through challenges and setbacks, and you know, master new skills, and more importantly, learn from the success of our peers, like the way like the way we do here. So, Jackie, what are the three most important blanks that come to your mind that you think product managers and other makers, designers, could be should focus on in developing this product mindset? You know, I'm just careful here in calling them as blanks, because I just don't want to stereotype them into skills or techniques or whatever. No,
it's a really great question, and it's kind of funny because I wrote a blog post the other day called "Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Product Management," that is sort of on this topic. And so what I said there that I truly believe is three most important things are focusing on the customer, and that can be. That can be your customer for your product that you're building, but even if you're not a PM, even if you're a doctor or you own a restaurant, there's always different types of customers you can think about. Even if you're working on internal tools, you have a specific type of customer.
Right.
So that's the first one, is focusing on the customer. The second is defining success. And to me, this is so, so important. And it's one of those magic skills that PMs have, is that it's basically thinking about, for anything you're doing, like, why am I doing it? What am I trying to achieve? And if you just take the 2 minutes to think about that and maybe talk in the room with the other people you're working with about what success means, you can, it's such a valuable investment. You'll realize that two people were going in opposite directions, or you'll all get on the same page really quickly, and you're creating this definition that you can refer back to for all the rest of the work. So it's sort of the most important beginning. And the example of this is just like, you know, a really easy example is when you're doing a meeting, you can talk about like, what's the goal of this meeting? Are we trying to make a decision in this meeting? Or are we just trying to like, is the goal of this meeting just so that we can all hear each other's points of view?
Right.
Yeah. And then the third one is leading without authority. Mm-hmm. And it's really important as a PM because you're not actually managing people. But when I started talking to people about this, they're like, even if you are managing people, you still have to lead without authority. Mm-hmm. At any kind of tech company, you don't actually have you're not in the military. You can't say like, you can't bark out orders and have people do it for you. You really have to, even if you're the boss, you have to convince the people on your team that they want to be doing the thing that you actually want to do. And that skill is, I think, really critical to thinking about how to work with other people and build great products.
Right. And, you know, when you talked about defining success, you know, I had just this question in my mind coming up, which is, you know, I've seen people use different kinds of techniques to define success. You know, I was speaking mm-hmm. to Christina Wodke. She was talking about the book she wrote, which is, you know, on OKRs, which is using OKRs mm-hmm. and using OKRs at a personal level as well to help mm-hmm. you define your, you know, objectives and track them and you do a weekly sprint, so to speak. So is there a way you personally, you know, track your success and define and track your success?
So at Asana, we use OKRs for our company success. Mm-hmm. And then people will sometimes also set individual goals. Mm. And so that's a good way. And then when we do that, we try to always set a due date for when to check in on, like, have I actually succeeded at this? Mm-hmm. But I would say that I don't have just one way that I define success because I'm doing it in so many different places. And the way that I define success with my team is different than the way I would define success with my toddler. I certainly don't have like a dashboard at home with, you know, my home personal success. I sort of treat that a little differently.
I see. Great. Just was curious there. So, you know, you talked about a high tolerance for failure early on, mm-hmm. right? So one of the things I've seen is a lot of product makers, you know, look at failure a little differently. How do you personally look at failure, Jackie? And as a person you are, how, you know, what is your instinct when you see failure and how do you react to it? How do you take the next steps?
Yeah. Yeah. So when I see failure, I think of it as a learning opportunity. And so I'm pretty excited as I, almost never get, I don't get mad about failure. Mm-hmm. I see it and I'm like, awesome. What can we learn? What happened here? How can we not make this mistake again? And it's also a sign that you're doing interesting enough things, that you're trying something that's hard enough. Mm-hmm. So I love failure. I think it's, I think that if you're not failing, you're not trying hard. You're not trying hard enough things.
Yeah. You know, on a related note again, since you work with Google, Microsoft, and now, Asana, mm-hmm. and you written a book, and I'm sure you've gotten a lot of, interactions with other PMs in different forum, what are the biggest mistakes that you see product managers make?
Learning mistakes. So, scoping is one of the big ones. Mm-hmm. And for me, actually, one of the things that I'm really passionate about, pointing out is that, it's easy to point a finger when somebody's scope's too small, right? If you, mm-hmm. if you decide to launch something and you knew there was a feature that everybody wanted, but you thought maybe you could get it out there without it. And everybody's like, no, I can't believe that this ruined my workflow. Or you decide to roll something out like a little bit quickly before getting full customer validation and everybody hates it. And then you have to like roll it back. Mm-hmm. So people often point a finger and they're like, you launched too fast. You weren't careful enough. But I really like to point the finger at the other side, which is all the people who took too long to launch and were too careful. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to see that. I think that because you don't get that clear, you know, public outrage that you launched something that they didn't like. Instead, everybody loves it. And you just have this sort of question in your mind of like, could we have done less? And sometimes you can tell that it was too much because one of the things you built, nobody's using, and you look at the metrics and it's just not good enough. Mm-hmm. But other times it's really only that you realize you took too long because some people around you who have more experience than you kind of can have that sense of like, I think you could have done it sooner, and you have to play with it. So maybe your first launch goes perfectly, and that's a good sign that maybe next time try a little bit less. Right. And then maybe that one goes perfectly too. So next time try even a little bit less and keep trying less until you realize it was too little. And then the next time you can know that you can go a little bit more. But I'm often surprised by how much I can cut out in scope, by how many things people assume you have to build. Mm-hmm. And that turns out not to be true. And then the only reason that this works so well, especially in, you know, if you're doing online products, is that you get stuff in front of customers. Right. So, you know, at Microsoft, I worked on boxed software. It got burned into a DVD and shipped. Mm-hmm. And so that's not as nice of a place to try that incremental approach, because if you get it wrong, you have to wait 3 years for the next version. But if you're doing online software, and you can get like especially if you can get a beta group or something like that to try out your ideas, it's always good to start small.
Right. Perfect. Jackie, let's move on to the last part of our chat here, which I call as a crystal ball. So it's all based on the fact that we all have opinions, right? While, you know, some of these opinions themselves may not be that important, they sometimes bring in these interesting perspectives that could trigger newer conversations about the future of products and the discipline of product management. So, Jackie, the notion of products has evolved a lot, like you described, even with Microsoft box products to today's products. And then you have APIs and the no UIs, UIs, IoT, name it. How do you see the notion of products change in the next 5 years?
Yeah. So one trend that I've seen and that Asana has sort of built on is this idea that customers are demanding that their products are both easy to use and powerful. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't true in the past. That in the past, you know, you'd have your business products that are super powerful but really complicated, and you'd have your consumer products that are really easy to use but have no power. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more and more this trend of customers wanting them both together. They want their business tools to be really, really easy to use without sacrificing power, and they want to be able to do more and more with the apps that they're using in their personal lives.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So in the same context that you're talking about this change, how do you see the role of a product manager evolve?
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting. One thing that I suspect is that we're going to see a lot more product managers. Because right now, not every company has a product manager. There are some companies that just have, you know, the engineers are deciding what to build, or the sales team are shaping the products. But I think that as ease of use and power become more important, it's a sort of a specialized skill to be able to design something that gets the best of both worlds. And so I think that a lot more companies are going to be hiring product managers.
Nice. Great. I mean, this has been an interesting conversation here. So here in the community, I push my listeners to take action. What is that one thing you want my listeners to do as soon as they finish listening to this episode?
I would love if people would come over to my blog. I've written some really interesting articles, one of them on five exercises you can do to practice product sense. Mm-hmm. So my Twitter name is Jackie Bo, JACKIEBO. Mm-hmm. I've been blogging a whole bunch. I'll tweet out all those blog posts, and I'd love if people would check out the recent posts I've done on practicing product sense. I've got something there on stakeholder management, and a little bit on a really interesting one I did recently on how we do our whole product road mapping process at Asana.
Is there one of those articles or one of those areas that my listeners can go read on or do something. I mean, I'm just trying to see what. I mean, I totally believe in this in this whole instant gratification thing. And is there something that people can do right now in the next 30 minutes, get something out of it?
Yeah, I think, so I've got one of the ones that I've got, one of the practices I have on five exercises to practice product sense that I think could be really exciting is I've got a cross-training exercise on there. So this is the idea that you can basically put a bunch of products on index cards, write them down, pull two of them out at the same time, and then just go through a little brainstorming exercise of how one of them could be applied to the other. So if you say, like, what if it's like Yelp for healthcare, or Uber for coffee cups, or you know, I think that's a fun exercise that will get people into a creative mindset and help help people see the way that see the way that product thinking works, where you really can learn something from almost any product that exists out in the world.
Perfect. That sounds like an interesting activity. I hope people, listeners listening to us, do it right now. All right. Thank you so much, Jackie. It's been fun chatting with you.
Thank you, too.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to be with us. All right. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation as much as I enjoyed asking Jackie all those questions. There were a few things that actually stood out for me. One is about productivity. When I asked her about productivity, she talked about the way she looks at things that she has on her plate. And she asked this question, how long is it worth? And I really think that's a very important point that she's making there. Because as people making products, or just about anybody, right? We sometimes have more time and sometimes we have less time. And when we have more time, the way we look at the opportunities or the tasks that we have lying around waiting for us to take action is very different from the way we look at them when we have less time. When we have less time, it's important for us to look at these tasks and activities and opportunities and ask this question, how much is this activity or opportunity worth? Because my time is scarce and it's expensive. That's a great way of looking at things. And I really like the fact that she focused on leading without authority. Now, that she focused on this couple of times during the conversation. And I think it's very, very important. And even if you're leading with authority, it's important for us to realize that it's relationships that finally work. It's nothing else that works. Only relationships work when it comes to getting stuff done. All right, that's all I have for today. I really hope you enjoyed listening to Jackie Bevereau, and I really hope you found something that you would want to go and put to action. Again, you can find the show notes by heading over to designyourthinking.com/episode132. And I really would appreciate you leaving a rating and review for this show. Yes, I really mean it. All you need to do is head over to designyourthinking.com/iTunes from any of your Apple devices, or if you're using iTunes from a Windows device, that's fine. Because iTunes is the market where people like you find the show, and I really think more people like you should listen to these great conversations. So head over to designyourthinking.com/iTunes and you'll get redirected to the show on iTunes itself. Once you're there, you can see a tab called Ratings and Reviews. Just click that and you'll find a small box, text box right there where you can type in whatever you think about the show. And I would really appreciate if you could select all the 5 stars to leave a 5-star rating. But of course, do what you feel is right. And I really appreciate you doing that. Leave your Twitter handle or something that I can use to reach out to you and thank you in person. Thank you so much again. Till I see you in the next episode, stay tuned, stay inspired. Keep pushing, my friend. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Design Your Thinking podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at www.designyourthinking.com.